The next hour or so is meant for education and advice. At no point should this replace mental health psychotherapy or regular contact with a mental health provider. As always, if this is an emergency or becomes an emergency, call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room. You are now listening to Parent Talk with Carrie, presented by Carrie Valdez. Carrie is a licensed clinical social worker who has specialized in the mental health treatment of children and families for over 12 years. She is a Becoming a Love and Logic Parent trainer and has her private practice in Nashville, Tennessee. And now, here's Parent Talk with Carrie.
Hi. All right. Today we're going to talk about the teen years. I guess we should start at first talking about what is a teenager. Teenagers are actually trying on adulthood. Teenagers are trying on different hats, different values, and different ideas to see how these things fit into their lives. So this is their opportunity to try on being little adults while still living with you. Okay? Eventually, they come full circle to your values and your beliefs at about 30 years old. But in the meantime, they're still trying to figure out who they are and who they're going to be, right? Those teens that have been taught to think for themselves are less influenced by peers than those teens who are not taught to think for themselves. So do you remember that we've always talked about having our kids to be independent? To make choices is the best way to do that. They make choices for themselves about their lives, and then they get to figure out how the choices that they make affect them, right? We need them to be good little decision makers about how their decisions affect them, not how their decisions affect us as parents or how the decisions are going to affect their teachers. It's how their decisions are going to affect their own lives, right? They become then independent little thinkers. These are the kids that are less influenced by peers. These tend to be more of the leader thinkers, right? So those of you who have the style of drill sergeant or the helicopter parent, so you're rescuing or you're just ordering, your kids aren't as independent thinkers, right? They're going to be more influenced by peers because someone is supposed to help them. Someone is supposed to tell them how to think. And if it's not you, then it's going to be the little boy next door. It's going to be, you know, Stephen when he says, yes, you do need to smoke a joint. They're going to go, oh, okay, I do need to do that. So all these things, this kind of stuff starts very early on. Now, not all is lost if you're just tuning in now because things have gone fine and now you're looking at your teenagers going, who are you and where did you come from, right? This stuff is still going to be quite helpful. But if we start younger, it's also still helpful then too, right? We've had a good foundation of them being independent decision makers for themselves, okay? And then the other thing is that in the teenage years, the most important thing we have with them is our relationship with them, right? Have you noticed that kids who don't seem to care that much about consequences are the kids that don't really have been treated with respect and they don't feel love? They don't feel like they are respected. They don't feel loved. And they don't love the person who is giving them these consequences, right? They don't have respect for them. The obvious case of that would be the parents who are using all the time, right? They're using, your kids know you're using, they know you messed up all the time, and now you're trying to fuss at me because I want to go hang out with my friends. Are you trying to make me do things around the house? You know, I'm not. And they don't feel anything about it. They don't feel bad about it. They don't feel anything because they don't feel like they've been given that either. So you are supposed to stay involved in their lives, right? So if we started this early, we're just continuing, and now is a good time to start. If you haven't, you're supposed to be involved and know who their friends are, have their friends over, have them have dinner. You know, dinner conversation is always informative, right? So you sit with dinner, you can ask them about their family, you can figure out stuff, how they respond to you, how they talk to your child, right? Especially if it's like a boyfriend or a girlfriend, how are they responding to each other? You know, what is their relationship like in their families? Do they have brothers? I mean, you can do all that, right? Or you could just sit quietly and listen. So, you know, you will kind of figure that out, hopefully, as you go through it, as to whether you should be asking questions or not. But we still want to give our kids lots of choices in this at this age. So we want to give them lots of choices so they feel like they have control in their lives. Remember, this is their first run at adulthood. They get to try it on with you still present to help out. In adolescence, the price tag goes up a lot, right? We still need to be around for them. The price tag goes up because the decisions that they make are life and death decisions now. They are driving, right? They are thinking about having sex. They are thinking about drugs and alcohol. So the decisions that they make are big now. We still need to kind of be around for those. And if we give them enough control so that they're not going to have to fight for control with us, right? This is not the time to let your kids have crazy freedom, right? This isn't the time to all of a sudden become a drill sergeant either with lots of rules and limits. You know, they're going to have a response to either one of those, okay? So set limits with them and let them make as many decisions about those limits as possible, okay? The first one that always comes to my mind is curfew, right, with teenagers. Curfew is a great way for everybody to make decisions in this. They can make the decisions about curfew. It should not necessarily be a set thing. Okay, during the week your curfew is 10, and on the weekend your curfew is midnight, right? I think the curfew should change with what they're doing. This is another way to have a conversation with your kids, too. Where are you going? Who are you going to be with, right? I need some phone numbers. I need to know how to find you. All those kinds of things are relevant. So each time your child leaves, you have to have a conversation about where they're going to be going so you guys can negotiate an appropriate time for them to come home. Okay? I love the idea that I know kids that have had curfew set at 10 who are done at 8 who stay out till 10 because that's the curfew. Whereas they could have been just come home at 8. And the same is true on the weekend. Want to be out until midnight because this group is now smoking joints, passing weed around. You don't really want to do it, but yet you can't really go home because your curfew's not till midnight, right? So give them the out, right, that they get to have the curfew. It's a negotiation. So if they say 3 o'clock in the morning, you get to go, okay, come on, really. If you're not going to take this serious, then I'm going to have to just make the curfew. But allow them to have some say in it. They're also going to be more likely to actually follow it if this is what they said, right? This is their way to have integrity. This is their way to do what they say, they're going to do. And you should still know where they are and who they're with. So phone numbers. First of all, if you're having them over, having them for dinner, you know who the kids are. You should get their phone numbers before they leave. If your kid's going to be at Stephanie's house, you need to know how to get Stephanie's phone number, how to get to her house. There's an emergency. You never know. And this is real life stuff. You never know. If something happens and you need to get to your child, you need to get to them then. 10 minutes of trying to figure out where they are is life-threatening sometimes. You need to know. You know, your kid all of a sudden comes up with the flu, is really sick, you need to be able to get to your kids, you know. Or if something happens to someone else in the family, you have to be able to find them, okay? So this is part of our job. So we need to know where they are because we need them. We need to be able to get in touch with them. Giving them your cell phone number is not enough. You need to be able to find their friends, too. You need to be able to find their friends' parents, too. Okay? All right. So how you responded to things when they were young, when they tell them to you, they will decide how that you're going to respond to things in adolescence, right? And then they will edit accordingly. So in elementary school, when they came home from school and they told you stories about what happened at school, and you would criticize and give judgment and tell them how they were wrong and what they should have done, they learned very quickly what to say and what not to say. It starts at a very, very young age. I know a kindergartner. I know a five-year-old was very, very careful with the words that come out of her mouth. She has been taught by her parents not to give the wrong answer. You always give the right answer, right? So her answers, you can tell, you ask this child a question, she's very thoughtful. She thinks about it, and she gives you the correct answer. She gives you what you want to hear. It has nothing to do with how she feels or what's really going on. She gives you the right answer. And that makes her crazy. She is an anxious little mess, right? So this is, they know very quickly the things that they can say and not say. So if you want to know what's going on, then you're going to listen without judgment and without an opinion, okay? So you can ask them for their opinion. So they tell you a story and you say, well, what do you think of that? And see what they say. Now, you could say, if it were me, I would. Now, that, if you feel like you have to say something, that would be probably the best way to do it. Or you could just say something like, how lucky Rebecca is to have someone like you as a friend, someone who can think more clearly, right? So we don't want to pass judgment. We don't want to criticize. We really appreciate the fact that we're in the know. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in a minute, too. So you don't want to straighten out their thinking, right? They are trying on stuff. They're trying on new values and new ways of thinking about stuff. So remember that. They're just kind of putting stuff out there. So, as an example, your child comes home and says at the dinner table that they've decided that there is no God, that they don't believe in God, and that they're not going to do that anymore. And your gut response might be, oh, no, yes, there's a God. No, there isn't a God. Yes, there's a God. Well, how do you know there's a God? Because it's what we were taught. Or you could say, you know what? Everybody in this house believes in a God. And if you're going to live in this house, guess what? You're believing in God. Or you could say, wow, that is an interesting way to think of things. I don't necessarily believe that, but I guess maybe kids your age think that now. Thanks for sharing. And then you kind of move on, right? So that could be the same example for, I think teenagers should have sex with whoever they want, when they want, how often they want, wherever they want. Most parents would freak and say, oh, no, you're not. No child of mine is going to be doing that. You know, then we get them stuck into this thinking. As opposed to them having it as a passing thought, now because we have argued and challenged the thinking, they're going to have to sit in it longer. Not that they're never going to not believe in God again. Not that they're actually going to be having random sex on a regular basis wherever they want to have it. They just have to sit with the idea of that longer, right? Whereas if we just kind of go, wow, well, I guess that's a way to think of things. I never thought of it that way. Thanks for sharing that. And you move on, they're going to go, huh, okay, maybe that's not really the way I think of stuff. And they're just going to sail right through it, okay? It also may feel like your kids want distance from you and they get annoyed with your questions and kisses or whatever, but they aren't adults and they still need and secretly desire you to still care for them. So be affectionate with them when their friends aren't there, okay? The other thing, this one I have a hard time with, if then statements tend to not work very well with adolescents. If then, if you do this, then that will happen. this doesn't really work a lot anyway. It doesn't work with your partner or your spouse very well. It's not going to work with your boss. It's not going to work with the police officer. It's not going to work with, it doesn't work well, right? For some reason, I don't know why, I say it all the time. I need to stop, and I've always tried not to say it, but I usually end up having said it when I realize that I said it. So I'm sure I will get better with this. Hopefully, by the time my kids are in adolescence, I will be good at not saying if-then statements, okay? But if-then statements, the response to that is defense, right? It's a challenge. So we don't, that's not the goal here. There are no warnings for consequences either. If you've agreed on something, if you guys have worked it out, then, and they abused it, then there should just be a consequence, right? You shouldn't say, okay, if you do that again, you're fixing to mess up. You're fixing to mess up. Don't do it. Don't do it. No. We don't give all these warnings about stuff. I mean, we're talking about teenagers. Now, I'm going to tell you now, we don't give warnings at all anyway, right? Even when they're little, we don't do that. That's not real life, right? But this is the time where we really don't. They're not stupid. They're old enough to understand. They can hear you. They understand the concepts and stuff, blah, blah, blah. So you just give the consequence. You give a reasonable consequence for what's going on. Now, remember, we always give a consequence with empathy first. Sorry. So empathy first is something like, oh, gosh, that's so sad. I hate when that happens. That did not go well. Right? It's empathy first and then the consequence. Right? Now, we have to practice that. So we should start wherever your kids are now. If your kids are not in the throes of adolescence, if they're still pre-adolescence and they're like in 11 and 12 and they're all hormony anyway, this is a good time to start that stuff. Right? Start practicing really well with that empathy coming first. Now, in a lot of the other shows, we talk about this too. But what happens when we do that is that the empathy is what they see and not the anger, right? We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a second. Remember how important role modeling is? Another thing that I'm not a big fan of is role modeling because that implies then I have to be good all the time, and I am not, right? But it's still really important. You know, are you a good friend? Are you kind? Are you respectful to others? Are you respectful to strangers? Are you respectful to your kids? Respect goes both ways all the time, even at two. Even at one, even at three, I'm talking about years old, right? It is a mutual, respectful relationship. Everybody has a role in it, right? You don't get to walk in the room and change the channel on the TV of a show that the kids have been watching. That's rude. It's not respectful to them because when they do it to you, you're going to freak. But why wouldn't they? You know, respect goes both ways all the time, no matter how old they are. So, chores. Chores make kids feel valued and part of a family. And we're going to talk a lot about chores in a minute, but chores make kids feel valued and a part of the family. You wouldn't think that chores were so powerful. I actually didn't know how powerful chores were. You know, until I started doing all this research and a lot of the Love and Logic stuff and Jim Fay, and there's a whole CD on just chores. So the stuff that we talk about is coming from the whole Love and Logic perspective, which I really like. So there's a relationship, just briefly, that there's a relationship between gangs and families, right? And if chores make kids feel valued and part of a family, right, if they don't have those things, they go looking for a family somewhere else. They go look to fit somewhere else. Gangs is a great place for that. The other thing that you can think of is just groups of people that feel like family. It could be a fraternity, a sorority. Those kinds of things are kind of the surrogate way of having a family when they're away from their family, right? Now, obviously, we hope that the fraternity sorority path has philanthropic things, that they do kind things for others and that they're not, you know, doing the same things that gangs do. But think about it. They stand up for each other. They stick together all the time. You know, the family is the most important. The Bloods, it's the family. They are the family of Bloods. That's what they are, right? They take care of each other. There is a hierarchy and order. Who is in charge? Who does this, right? Same is true in a fraternity. The Sig Taus stick together. They take up for the Sig Taus. There's a hierarchy in that group too, right? Same is true for the Sigma Kappas. So think, you know, this is all kind of ways for kids to feel like part of a family. All right, so in order to start that, chores is a great way to do that. So one thing that we can do is that kids should start cooking a meal every week at about 9 years old, okay? So one meal a week they should cook. Now, those of you who have like 4 and 5 kids, how amazing does that idea sound? That's like you cooking once a week or less if you have more kids. That's just fabulous. Now, the quality of your food might take a dip for a while, but I'm thinking people are going to be real willing to teach this kid how to cook well if this is what they have to eat every week, right? So, again, it's helping with the family and not just them. So kids who feel bonded with a family are also much better students, right? They feel connected to a group. They are better students. Kids should be doing their fair share of work without reminders and without a battle, right? So an example of how to get that done would be something like, what would you like to do to contribute to the family? If they're worth keeping, they would say nothing, because that's what I would say. I don't want to have to do anything. But then you need to say, okay, well, we need to balance this out. And you could actually make a list, right? A list of things that you do and a list of things that they are going to do. How are they going to contribute to this group? You can make the list. The list of things you do is things like pay the mortgage, right? Buy the food, do the laundry, buy the clothes, drive them places, pay for extracurricular activities, right? Those are the things that you can put on your list. And then they need to have some things in the list. The expectation is that they're not equal, because clearly there are more things that you're going to be doing. They need to participate in the family, okay? All right, flipping through my notes here. There's a strong correlation between kids who contribute to the family in the form of chores and achievement in school. I think it's just kind of self-explanatory. Okay. If you can't get them to do their fair share at home, do not ever go to school and complain that the teacher is not motivating your child. Clearly, you have not figured that out either, and this is your child. So, you know, make sure that before you go in there, you can do these things. Kids have a strong need for love and affection, even in adolescence. They need healthy amounts of control. We only need the minimum of control. That's all we really need, okay? And they want to feel like part of a family. If they don't, they will find it. They will find it in the forms of gangs and groups of people who, depending upon their age, it's not so good. It tends to not be so good, right, for them. Some cop-outs to chores that parents give are working parents don't want to spend the only time they have at home arguing with their kids. Cop-out. We don't want our kids living at home as an honored guest. They are not honored guests. It doesn't work that way. Wait, let me turn my page here. So they need about 30 minutes of chores a day. Do not cop out with "my kid's job is school." I can't understand why Rodney has such a bad attitude. We never ask him to do anything. Well, that's part of the problem. He doesn't feel connected to. He doesn't feel part of. Okay? And doing that through chores is the best way to do that. Parents argue sometimes that he's so busy there's no time to make contribution to the family. And he should probably not be so busy, right? The chores need to be about the family and not about them, because then it's about the quality of his life and it's self-centered. So your chores to keep your room clean is not good, right? In all honesty, I don't care if they keep their room clean or not. Shut the door, right? There can be rules about it, like no food left. We would prefer not to have rodents and, you know, other creatures in the house. But really, that's about them. So if they want to live that way, that's fine. But participating in the family is chores for the whole family, not just for them, okay? What comes first is your contribution to the family, not your contribution to yourself, okay? So Love and Logic, Jim Fay says that we should make slaves of our teenagers, which just makes me giggle. I like that. I like the idea of that, you know? I hope that you will get so good at your chores that it does not affect your school, your sports, or your social life. And then you're done. You know, then that's it, right? Don't expect your kids to take this lying down, however, right? Again, if they're worth keeping, they're going to fight for themselves, right? So they might say, I wasn't born to be a slave, you know? That's when you lay on lots of empathy first, right? We don't get to anger first. We don't get to lectures first. We go to empathy first. Empathy keeps them thinking, and it sucks up emotion, right? So anger usually comes at first. So practice using your empathic responses a lot, right? Now remember, your empathic responses are, oh, wow, that's sad. Or, whoa, what happened there? Or, oh, doesn't that just aggravate you? Man. Oh, wow. Any of those things. It is an empathic response. Now, it is an empathic response without sarcasm, okay? I'm the queen of sarcasm. I immediately go to sarcasm. I work very hard to not be sarcastic. So empathy, not sarcasm is still sarcasm. It's still ugly, right? So when you lead with empathy, they don't associate the bad decision with you. They associate the empathy with you. When you lead with empathy, it's also holding them accountable for whatever their bad decision was, right? If we go at it with anger, then they just get to be mad at us. They don't feel responsibility for their bad decision. They need to feel it. They need to own it, because then they're less likely to do it again. They will be more thoughtful next time. They will think about how the decisions that they make affect them. I like the idea of delaying consequence, right? So, wow, that's so sad. I'm going to have to do something about that, but not right now. I'll let you know. Don't worry. Right? I like that. With adolescents, it's a little torturous, which makes it even more fabulous. So you haven't said it with anger. You're not being ugly. You're not threatening. You're not lecturing. You're just saying, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming. I'm going to have to do something about that. Got to think something first. Go back to you. Don't worry. Right? What do you think they're going to do? They're going to worry. They're going to think about it. They're going to think about what they did. And they don't get to be mad at you because you weren't mad at them. You haven't even told them the consequence yet. So they don't even get to be mad about missing whatever they might miss yet. They're going to have to sit in the space of, oh, what have I done? Right? What has my choices done to me? Kind of thing. Okay. Don't try to parent by yourself. It is very hard. They did not come with a manual. Sometimes they throw stuff at us that we totally don't expect. So don't try to do it by yourself. You know, I've got to do something about this, but I'm going to have to call some friends and find out some suggestions first. Don't worry. We'll come up with something. Right? I love that. It actually makes me laugh. Every single time I say it, it makes me laugh. You know, so they know that you got to do something. You're going to do research to find it out what you're going to do to them. Okay. Sometimes we just can't think of a good consequence, right? Restitution is fine. Restitution pays you back for your time, your energy, and the worry in your behalf. All right. The consequences that you don't want to give is usually the best one. When you find yourself saying, the one thing that I just don't want him to have to miss, to have to do, to lose, whatever, that's probably the best one, okay? I know everybody's cringing. It makes me kind of cringe because I already have done that before. I'm like, God, I really don't want him to miss whatever it is, you know? That's usually the one that's going to be the most effective, and we get the lesson taught faster, and then we're done, okay? Teachers say the number one frustration is parents who rescue their kids from the consequences of their behavior. So their character will be greatly tarnished if they don't get to deal with the consequences of their own behavior, right? So if they have detention and they have to miss the volleyball game, then they have detention. That's it. That's the deal. That is actually real life. You know, I mean, nobody cuts you a break. The police officer is going to cut you a break because you have to get to the PTA meeting. You're going to be late, and you're the president, and you're putting it on, and he's got to let you go. No, he's not. He's going to give you the ticket. He's going to do whatever he's supposed to do. All right. So we have a nation full of people who are far more concerned about the piece of paper and the transcript than character. You know, I want you to fast forward your kids in life. I know that education is important. I know that their transcript is very important and gets them into college. I know that sometimes it's very important to landing them their first job. But here's the thing. When they're 40, aren't you going to be more concerned about how they are in their character and if they're good people, if you have to worry that they're going to steal from you when they come into your house? You have to worry that they're, you know, the deadbeat dad. Are you going to ask them what their grades are, what their grades were? It's not as relevant then. You know, and remember, we spend most of our lives in adulthood. Most of our lives, after we get out of college, it's adulthood for a long time. So they need have a good education. I don't want you to think I downplay that. But I want you to know how very important character is as well. Because we all know that person that's really bright, that has done highly immoral things to get up there in life. This is probably not the person that you want to be your neighbor, right? There's also those kids that don't do well in school. They aren't made that way. They are made to be builders. They are made to be other people, but they have very good character. They're good dads. They're good in their community. They help others. That is character. Character is what we want. Fabulous transcript, great grades with no character is scary, right? They are free then to do whatever they need to do to get what they want. Character with morals and ethics are the things that keep us good, that make you a good person. Okay. So, in restitution, so if you can't really think of necessarily a good consequence that fits the exact thing that they did, you can say. The other thing about delaying consequence is that you get the chance to calm down, right? When we're mad, it is not good to deliver consequence then. If we can make sure that we get through our empathy, right, without yelling and screaming and lecturing, then we're doing good. We should just leave. We'll talk about the consequence later. I am frustrated and angry now. I need to go calm down, right? It is okay to say all that too. You know, I think this is really sad that this happened, but I got to go calm myself first. So you don't worry about it. There will be a consequence, but I need to come up with one first, right? You could also say, I never figured out how to handle it, and I've been working on it. So instead of doing the chores that I have, like cleaning the oven or picking up after the dog in the backyard, I guess when you're done doing those chores, then it'll all be square, right? So they can end up just doing stuff for you. Restitution can just be about that, right? There is something that happens for them making their bad decision. Okay. They're not going to like it. They're going to say things like, I'm not your slave. It's not fair. When they do those things, that's when you're supposed to go brain dead, right? They start. You just kind of respond with, I know. We're not arguing. We're not thinking of stuff to tell them. We're not making a big moral statement. You know, we've talked about that before, too. If you want to teach morals and ethics and how to be a good person, we do that when things are good, right? When everything's fine, when we're having a nice meal. That's when we have conversations about that. We don't teach morals and ethics in the heat of the moment. Nobody's listening. They're not listening. They're thinking of the next thing that they need to say, and they're thinking about winning this argument. And they're thinking about, how am I going to do this so I don't have to feel responsible for the bad decision that I made? Okay, not the time. So basically, you just kind of go brain dead. You just say, I know, and then you're quiet, and they keep going. This is stupid. You're so out of it. I didn't ask to be born in this family. This sucks. You just keep saying I know without sarcasm, right? Well, that sarcasm is key. Try to remember that. And then your kids are going to turn it up, and they're going to continue to say stuff, and you're just going to continue to be brain dead. Kind of go, I know, or you can say, nice try. And my all-time favorite that most of my parents love as well is, I love you too much to argue. And then I would leave. I walk away, right? That's when you leave and you go in another room or you know, something else. And you can just keep saying it over and over. That's going to annoy them as well. But it's also not going to be engaging in an argument with them, okay? If you have a life lesson to teach, teach it later, the next week, the next day when things are good, okay? And teach it in the form of a life lesson, not, oh, look, you have totally messed up. Let's talk about that again. Let's revisit that problem that you gave us, and let's talk about morals and ethics. No, you talk about it in general, morals and ethics. That's just how you talk about it. Okay, let's see. There's a correlation between how kids see their parents as authority figures and how they see teachers as authority figures. Now, there are the situations where kids are actually far better in school, better behaved in school, that is, than they are at home. If that is the situation in your house, I need you to be self-reflective, okay? I want you to think about how is it in your house that you can change things to mimic what's happening in school? What has the teacher done that this child is more responsive to her, feels more of an obligation to be respectful to the things that she asks for or he asks for? A lot of times it's because, first of all, teachers innately are teachers because they want to be, right? We all know it's not like the highest paying profession. So these are people that are kind of called to do this. So they have the skills of commanding authority, right? They do it better a lot of times than we do. So how is that done? How are they doing that? How would I learn to do that? Is it that they're just being consistent all the time? Is it that they are, following what they say they're going to do with consequences as well as being nurturing to them, not holding grudges to them, but holding them accountable for themselves, you know, all these things. So I would be thoughtful and self-reflective if that's happening in your house. What do I need to do? And it could be a lot of times it's as easy as just being consistent all the time. Okay. Let's see. So how do we get chores done? One way is don't tell them to do it now, right? Have your chores done by noon on Saturday. Have your chores done by 6 o'clock on Wednesday night. The kids are going to say, no way. You say, I love you too much to argue. And then you pray that they forget to do it, right? We want them to make the mistakes now. So you pray for them to forget, and all teenagers need us, right? It probably might not even be 10 minutes later when they're asking for something. Mom, can you bring me to Susie's house? Mom, can you take me for a driving lesson? Dad, can we go do whatever, you know? This is when we get to go, you know what? Sorry, can't. I used up all my energy cleaning up that room that I asked you to clean up by Saturday. You know, don't give up on me. Maybe again next week. That's it. You're not going to be mad about it. We're not giving a lecture, right? Sorry, guy, I can't do it today. I used up all my energy, you know, having to look at the filthy room the whole time. No, ask me again another time, right? And then you keep going. And again, you're not mad. We're not arguing. They have to feel bad about their own decision, which they're not going to like, by the way, right? But then they're going to think the next week more about, okay, I am going to need this person to bring me to this party, so I should probably get this done. So then she can't say, oh, no, I use up all my energy, can't bring you, can't buy it, I'm not willing to give, that kind of thing. Okay, so we don't warn or threaten about what will happen if they don't, right? If you don't do the if-then, we don't do that, if-then statements, we have to work very hard because I am the queen of that and they come really easy for me. So try not to use the if-thens so we aren't going to threaten. Don't give up. Remember, you got to get the bathroom cleaned up by noon. Remember, you guys, you only have like 30 more minutes. No, no, no. We actually want them to mess up. We want them to have a hard time so then they can learn how their decisions affect them, right? The other thing is that it shows them how very consistent we are and that we are trustworthy and that we do what we say we're going to do. And when we say that we're going to keep them safe, we are. And when we say that we're going to be there for them, we are. And when we say that we love them, we do, right? Then they trust us on all of those things. Your family comes first, right? We want them to feel like an important contributing part of the family. We are not their friend, right? I get quite nauseated when I hear parents say that they're best friends with their kids. I hope that that is not your goal. Your goal is not to be your best friend with your kid, especially with your adolescent. Your goal is to do your job. Your job is to parent, right? We are parents. We're not their best friend because we are inevitably going to have to make some tough decisions. And if you're worried about losing them as a friend, you got a lot to lose here. You know, you might be less willing to give them the consequence to teach them really important life lessons because you don't want them to not be your friend. You know, I think that's crazy, crazy, crazy talk. We are a parent. That is our job, is to be their parent. We are not buddies. We are not good friends. Okay, that will come later, much later, like 30. Maybe earlier for some people, maybe not. But they will have to be with kids, maybe, before this happens. You know, we aren't friends. I can tell you now, my mom is still my mom. And she fusses me like she's my mother. And so does my dad. And I feel like 5-year-old when they do. But they're real clear that we get along, we help each other out. It's great. But if they feel that they need to fuss, they will, right? I know that my mother is still going to be my mother forever. All right, so if your child says crazy things, right, crazy things at the dinner table, I don't believe in this, I believe in this, it freaks you out, it's best for you to just thank them for sharing so that they can move through those stages quickly, okay? Parents that can't do that have their kids that sit in some of that thinking longer to prove you wrong, okay? So let's do a quick review here. The highlights for this is that teenagers are basically trying on adolescence, right? I mean, they're trying on adulthood. Teenagers are trying it on, trying to figure out where they fit, what their beliefs are going to be, who they want to be like. Okay, eventually they come full circle, right? Back to what they originally grew up with, what their parents believed, and how you lived your life in role modeling, how you lived your life, right? So this is who they are, right? The other thing is that we have to be respectful to each other. They need to be independent thinkers, give them lots of choices. We only need as little control as possible. Okay, they are going to be more responsive to you if they feel that they have control in their lives. And they need to have, remember, curfew is my big example of that. They need to feel like they have some control in their lives. You still get to be there, right? You get to know who they're with, where they're going. You get phone numbers. Safety comes first. This is part of my job, right? Let's see. Trying to think of the highlights. Oh, goodness, no judgment. We want them to talk and share without being criticized. I would rather know what's going on and what they're thinking than try to impose my thinking or to straighten out their thoughts, okay? Then you won't get any of their thoughts. They won't tell you. They will learn that very early on. They might know it now. You might be having to do some makeup work at this point of asking them to share and just shutting up. Just not saying a word, just going, okay, you know, I didn't know that. Wow, isn't that interesting? That kind of stuff. They are still kids. They are still our kids. They still need affection and love. Just try to be kind to them when you do it, right? Don't do it in front of their friends. Just do it, you know, at night when you're going to bed. I still think that there needs to be a physical contact before bedtime, a hug, a kiss, a high five, pat on the shoulder, whatever. There needs to be a physical contact and some kind words, right? These are still your kids, even though they're in much bigger bodies. They should participate in the family by doing chores. Chores builds character, right? Chores builds character, morals, and ethics, okay? Chores. Makes them feel like part of the family. They do better in school when they feel connected to the family. How do they feel connected to the family? Through chores. Chores are not them satisfying their own needs by cleaning their own room. It is chores for the family. So, you know, like cooking dinner once a week, cleaning the kitchen, you know, doing the laundry, vacuuming. I mean, all these kinds of things, taking care of the yard, helping dad outside, doing it by yourself, you know, those kinds of things. Their chores come before all that other stuff, right? Remember, they need to feel connected to your family first. Those other things are really good, right? Sports are good. Music is good. Chess is good. But first is the value that they have in their family. Okay, let's see. They shouldn't live in your house as an honored guest. It should be about 30 minutes of chores a day. I mean, you know, they're not doing it all night. You do more than 30 minutes of chores a day anyway. So we're not asking for something ridiculous either. Oh, remember, consequences lead with empathy. Empathy is the key here. Lead with empathy, not with anger. Stop lecturing, stop giving threats, okay? These are very, very hard to do because those are the things that come up first, right? Anger comes up, threatening comes up, and lectures come up. And like, just they just happen. So we need to lead with empathy. So start practicing all the time. Practice all the time how you're going to do that. Okay. Looking real quick to see. Restitution for things that they've done can look like chores, too. You can go chop that pile of wood for me. That'll help out a lot, and we'll call it even. Okay. Remember, teachers' biggest frustration is that parents rescue their kids from their own misbehavior. All right. Okay, I think we got it. I think we're good. So, I don't have a date for next month. Next month, I will send out an email reminder about the show, the day before the show. If you want to be on the email list, just go to my website and you can email me from there. My website is www.carryvaldezlcsw.com. So it's carryvaldezlcsw.com. So you can go there. If you want to be on the list, and just put add me to the email list. Or if you have a question or anything else. The other thing I've heard is that people have had a hard time finding me. So finding the show, that is. The easiest way to do it is to just go to Blog Talk Radio. Just, you know, Blog Talk Radio and put my name in the search box. Put Carrie Valdez in the search box, and then it'll pull up my stuff. All right. I hope everyone has a good day, and I will chat with you guys soon. Thanks.
The next hour or so is meant for education and advice. At no point should this replace mental health psychotherapy or regular contact with a mental health provider. As always, if this is an emergency or becomes an emergency, call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.